This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I speak with Paula Saunders about her latest novel, Starting From Here. The year is 1973, and 15-year-old Renee from working-class Rapid City, South Dakota, is sent away by her mother to pursue the unlikely dream of becoming a professional dancer. On this episode, we're diving into Paula Saunders' powerful novel, Starting From Here, which follows Renee's often tumultuous journey through the challenges of adolescence, artistic ambition, and finding acceptance in a world that doesn't always have her best interests at heart. Renee's difficult coming-of-age story is full of the enduring contradictions of familial love and the sacrifices we make for the life we desperately want. From the author of The Distant Home, Paula Saunders is back with Starting From Here, which can be considered a standalone sequel. Renee is chasing that dream of becoming a ballerina, but the journey takes her from that quiet town in South Dakota to the competitive dance studios of Phoenix and Denver, where she confronts bullying, neglect, and predatory adults. Renee chases her dreams along a path of obstacles. Her mother is supportive, but also sees her own unfulfilled dreams reflected in her daughter. This is a novel with deep resonances for readers who are Renee's age or once were. I spoke to Paula Saunders about her novel, Starting From Here. Starting From Here, I wonder if you can just set the table for us and tell us what this novel is about.
Okay, this novel is about a young girl, 15 years old, leaving home to kind of follow her dream of becoming a ballet dancer. She's from South Dakota, so she's in a place where ballet really isn't on the map yet, but somehow she and her brother have found her way into ballet lessons, and she has excelled at it. Her brother has too. They have two very different outcomes there. But in going away from home, she really is needing to accomplish, I think, three things for herself. She needs to get away from the turmoil of her family, because I think she understands that within her family, she's never really going to be able to blossom into the person she wants to be and even achieve the things she wants to achieve. The second thing she's doing is pursuing her art. She really wants to pursue her art. And the third thing, which she's not aware of at the time, is she needs to grow up. So she's in this book, she's 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. So she's really going through kind of the peak of adolescence, moving from girlhood to young womanhood. And that's really what the book is about, her artistic pursuit, being away from home and needing in the absence, in a kind of vacuum of family and community, to find her way through adolescence.
And I was thinking about how this is not such a unique story. I mean, there are resonances to be found, even for someone like me who came of age in the 70s and 80s and had an idea of what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be. And the family support was a certain way. I guess what I'm trying to say is, even though we're in South Dakota, this is a character who, for readers, is going to resonate in a lot of interesting ways. The familial conflict, her internal conflict, the types of things that young girls go through in certain situations, certainly during this particular time of life, right? 15, 16, 17. So I just really wanted to say that to you. And we're in the 1970s too. It's sort of like so interesting to read this as a person my age, but I really see how a young reader, a younger person could read this and still find so much resonance. Did you have fun writing in this particular era?
Well, you know, I came up in the 70s, so this is very autobiographical. I feel like we're in an interesting time. I think in a certain way, you know, the 70s were very progressive compared to where we are now. We were kind of looking forward to Roe v. Wade. We had that going on. We had the whole kind of sexual freedom movement going on. And we are in such a time of backward movement in terms of losing Roe v. Wade and in terms of possibly losing rights. There being even talk of women losing rights. So it's interesting to compare then to now, but I do think that this transition from young girlhood to young womanhood is universal. I think that all women have to go through it in one way or another. And I saw my daughters going through it, and they came up in the 90s and the 2000s. So it didn't really change. I was surprised at how much it hadn't really changed for them, because it felt like the women's movement was very strong. And I think it had changed in terms of their internal lives, but in terms of what they experienced in the world, I feel like it didn't change that much. So I think that, you know, older women like me will likely enjoy reading this book to look back at the things that they went through. But I don't think the things that women are going through have changed all that much. So I'm actually sorry to say that, but I think our culture is a little stagnant in that area and now is moving, tipping backwards.
You say such interesting things about what a progressive time that was. And then you think about where we are today and how we can see just how vulnerable progress has been, really, really is, because it's yes. just such a tentative little, you know, any little fissure and the thing just collapses, as we unfortunately have seen. So that's such an interesting idea.
I think so, too. I really do. And I think that, you know, one of the things you see with this young woman is she's very vulnerable, I think, to the kind of pressures of the culture and the power structure of the culture. And I think now with the Epstein thing going on, you see that young women have always been, and the men have been protected, and the young women have had to go through what they've had to go through without being heard or understood. You know, that's something to look at.
I absolutely agree. You know, it's so interesting to see this as a Bildungsroman story, as Renee is torn between her love for ballet, but also like this desire for acceptance and love. And she's grappling with so many things. There's this dilemma. There's an internal conflict for her, too, as happens with young girls. But then, as you say, there's also all of these external dangers, you know, these terrible things that potentially could really harm her and do. And I was thinking about how you're sort of reading about how the family allows her to go away to these other places, these other homes, and think, wow, that's kind of out there. That's kind of unusual. But, but probably not in this context, in this particular context of somebody who's going to study ballet. And so it's just a very interesting way to see how Renee's story forces her on this journey, and she's not protected. You know, mm-hmm. she's very vulnerable. There are other adults and parents around, but she's not necessarily safe. And then she's also not necessarily safe from the normal sort of typical things. I was thinking of like all the things that triggered me with some of the mean girls and, you know, some mm-hmm. of these things that happen. And it's all of a piece with the types of things that shape us. You know, Renee is really mm-hmm. going through so, so many things. And just on the surface, we know that ballet was not accessible, isn't accessible necessarily to everyone. I found it a very interesting way to show more obstacles and the diverse kinds of challenges that she has.
Yes, I think so too. You know, you started to talk about that decision to let her go away or to send her away. I think about that decision a lot, and it's a very strange decision. But you know, on the part of the mother, it's both a convenient decision because of all of the trouble the mother has in her own life, and also all of the trouble that this particular daughter seems to bring, because she's so strong-willed and she has such strong desires and, you know, all of that kind of thing. But also very brave of the mother yeah. in a certain way, and very understanding. And the mother has really, in a certain way, heard what the daughter would like and deeply desires, but isn't really able to come through in the way that's necessary, so tries to come through in the way that she can. So that's a very interesting decision. And you're right, it leaves the girl very, very vulnerable. The adults who she ends up with are busy with their own lives. I think the first family she lives with, I think it's kind of, they're maintaining their household as a kind of 50s household. The woman is maintaining kind of this 50s role. And then when she's in another living situation with a teacher of hers, that woman is trying to be kind of sexually free and open and get into it with the 60s swinger kind of culture. So Renee is like subject to each of these things along the way, but without anyone really being focused on her development. So she just has to kind of find her way through these different paradigms that exist at that time. So that to me was interesting.
It is. And it's not so, you know, out of the realm of possibility. And, you know, as is mentioned in the novel, this is a thing that, for instance, Olympians would have to do, like to move to another state mm-hmm. to be able to train. But at the same time, yeah, we see that there are other motives for the mother agreeing to do this. And, you know, it's, I think about this a lot when I read a novel like this one. I mean, in some ways, these are parents who, how do I say this? I think parents do the best that they can. And I think parents are flawed. And I think, mm-hmm. I think this is just a very important thing to underscore. Like, these are not one-dimensional sort of, you know, villainous bad people and that's it, period. Full stop.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, very, very important. Yes, right.
Yeah, I wonder if you can say more about that, because I think that it allows us to see even the fully formed parents, and they're not just like these, you know, these obstacles that she has to overcome on this journey. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think in the writing of it, that's really interesting, a really interesting question, because in the writing of it, I learned a lot, actually, about my parents. And I learned a lot, especially about my mother, because I think throughout my life, I've kind of, you know, had it in for her a little bit, been pretty mad at her. And, you know, as I was writing this, there were moments that just caught me off guard where I came to realize what her struggle must have been, because there would be a gesture or something she would say that would kind of shock me. And I would recognize the language, or I would recognize the scene, but I would be like, oh, that's what it felt like for her. It was overwhelming. Oh. I mean, really, the issues that she was dealing with in her life were overwhelming. And that was really brought home to me in the writing of it. So through writing it, because of writing it, I came to a real compassionate understanding of my mother's life. And, you know, that's a huge blessing for me. It's a huge step for me in my life. So I feel like, you know, she's passed away. My father's passed away. But I feel like writing this book has been a different kind of reconnection with them, where I get to have more understanding. And that's a nice thing.
I love this idea. I've always thought that, I mean, it's not a terribly original thing to say, but I've always thought that fiction tells us the truest truths. Somehow more or just different from nonfiction. And so I really appreciate what you're saying. I recently interviewed the author Jill Bielowski about a nonfiction work called The End is the Beginning. And it's a memoir about her mother, but she starts, the book opens with the death of her mother. And then there's this reverse chronology, and we get to know, we turn the page and get to the new chapter, and we're learning more and more about the mother. And the mother is a younger and younger person as we go through the book. And I thought, this is so interesting, because I want to read more and learn more about the mother. And she becomes this really multidimensional person for whom we can give over a lot of grace and understanding. It wasn't like, just like my mother was in the nursing home and then she passed away, and that's what we're sort of building toward. Instead, it's like this other way of trying to understand the mother's motivations, how her life went, the twists and turns of her own life. And she was just so human. She was just another, she was like another girl for us to understand, like another daughter for us to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so lovely. I love making that connection between that book and this book. I think it's just so important to think about a Bildungsroman where, you know, the parents are, you know, doing the best they can. And it's not just like, oh, my parents were awful, the end, and that's it, because that's not how it works. That's not how it works. And your novel really shows us that. I mean, even with the character of Leon, I wonder if you can talk about Leon.
Okay, Leon is the brother who's equally talented in ballet as Renee. But he is, because of the culture of the plains of South Dakota, perhaps, the kind of more machismo culture, he's teased and kind of driven out of his passion. And so he turns to, because of a lot of reasons, and this is covered also in my first book, because the second book is a continuation. It definitely stands on its own, I think. But the first book has a little weightier explanation of Leon. But Leon then becomes an alcoholic. And so that's one of the things that the mother is struggling through as well. But let's see, what else do I have to say about Leon? He was equally talented. He was crushed, I think, by his culture, by the kind of patriarchal culture that he lived in. The same, I think, you know, one of the mistakes we make is that only women are crushed by patriarchal culture, and that's just not true. So, you know, Leon was a victim of that culture as well, and wasn't able to pursue dancing like he wanted to. Till the end of his life, he was as talented as anyone, as a dancer. He was very graceful and lovely and perfectly built. I saw a picture of my brother the other day with our two young daughters, and I just like looked at that picture. He was very tall. And I looked at that picture, I was like, oh my God, I've never seen a man with such beautiful legs, because he had shorts on. I was like, oh, he's just like built for it. Yeah. So it was really a loss for Leon. And he suffered for it through his whole life, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned that Starting From Here is a sequel to the novel The Distance Home. Tell me about this idea of staying with Renee and her family. We know in The Distance Home that the brother is not going to do so well, and bad things happen. And we can sort of, you know, and it sort of tracks, we can sort of trace it. And all throughout, Renee suffers in other ways, in the ways that overachievers do, I suppose. But, you know, tell me about how you kept with this idea of this family and these dynamics and these particular stories.
Well, these are my stories, so I don't know that I'll ever go too far from them. The first book, The Distance Home, is like an overview of the family. It starts, interestingly enough, like the book you describe. It starts with the death of the mother, and we move through then backwards and through the whole family history, kind of backwards and forwards in time, and through different points of view, so that by the end of the novel, almost all of the family members have passed away, except for the younger sister. So it's the younger sister and Renee who are still alive, though the story itself in the novel, in the timeline of the novel, ends with Renee going away at 15 to study ballet. So that was, you know, more of an ensemble piece or something like that. I was trying to kind of incorporate everyone's point of view, move point of view around, go back and forth in time. And that was good. So then in the second book, I wanted to try something very different. So I really stuck to a single point of view. I really wanted Renee's point of view. And that's the point of view you'd have to follow, because she's left home. But even when she's home, I basically stay in her point of view for the whole book. It doesn't move back and forth through time. It's very chronological and follows her story up until the point where she's about 18 years old. So that's the difference between the two books. So they're linear, but also interwoven in a certain way.
But this is, the second one is standalone. People don't have to read the first one, but they should.
definitely the second one is standalone. Yeah. This one is definitely a standalone book, yes.
So maybe too many young women go through these periods in their lives when they want to lose weight fast. And I know that in the world of ballet, this is maybe even more so the case. And it can bring just untold trauma to the body, to the mind. I appreciate that this is in the story of Renee. I mean, there are times when I think young women are in these situations surrounded by other people who don't have their best interest or maybe who are just disappointing for whatever reason, and situations are so scary and the uncertainty, and there's no control, there's no sense of control.
Right.
And other times, you know, I feel like young women fall into this kind of behavior. Not, I don't want to psychoanalyze anybody, but there's just this, sometimes there's a void that they simply cannot fill. And we see how this particular character is grappling with the things she knows she wants. And even I think there are some things that the things she doesn't know that she doesn't know yet somehow. And there, it's just so hard to be this age. The pressure that she feels also because of the sacrifice involved of allowing her to go on this path, I think it's almost too much for her. And there is this thing about her not eating, you know, her not being able to not just find a way to fill these voids that she might be somehow in some way discerning. But then also there's this other thing of almost like creating these other kinds of voids and with the idea that she might have a sense of control in her life by doing them. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's really a great observation. And I think that one of the things that her strict dieting or anorexia or whatever you'd like to call it shows in the book that's really important to me, and it was important to me to show, it shows the gulf that has sprung up between her and her original family. You know, because she's in a situation where she has to, in order to achieve what she has to achieve, she feels that she has to do this self-destructive eating or not eating. And so that is very kind of paramount for her because she has to make her way into this group of dancers who've had many more advantages than she's had. So that's important. And on the other hand, she has to somehow then when she goes back home, fit in with her family, which, you know, Texas toast, tuna casserole, you know, the whole thing, right? So, you know, that she's strawberry shortcake, she's got to fit in. And that's a very, very difficult thing for her to do. So that's a point of maturation for her as well. She has to understand where she is, when she's in a certain location, how to respond to that location appropriately. And yeah, so besides like being a reflection of her own, what she's lacking and needing to grapple with control, the control of her situation and her body, the fact is she does need to shape herself physically. So it's a difficult problem for a 15-year-old, for any of us.
For any of us, for sure. And for a 15-year-old. I was reading this novel and thinking about Renee's mother and her own, I don't know, unfulfilled dreams. And I see Renee as carrying a certain level of guilt or a certain level of something with that idea of all the ways that her mother could not be a ballet dancer or, you know, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I find a real richness in that sort of conflict that Renee has and this kind of burden that Renee has with a sense of guilt about the people that she's left behind.
I think that's right. I think that Renee really feels that she has to fulfill this dancing dream that she's had as a child, I might add. You know, she's had this dream of being a dancer. But she feels she has to fulfill it for her family. And I think that does come a lot from her mother. I mean, you see her mother was in High School Musicals and wanted to kind of be a show person or, you know, something like that. So that is like a motivation, but also becomes very, tainted or something. It becomes very burdensome to carry around someone else's dream. And really interferes with Renee's own dreams and own life and the kind of way that between 15 and, 18 or 20, your dreams will change and grow. So you definitely see that happening. So, you know, I don't know quite what to say about that. I think that will, I'm hoping there'll be another book after this one. I have a third one in mind and kind of in the works. So I think that you'll see more of the repercussions of that in the third book, where Renee finally, you know, steps into her own shoes and says, no, this is going to be my life.
Wow. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too.
You know, your book is my favorite kind of book to read in that it presents questions for us that there are no pat answers. You know, they're questions that are just not easily answered. I can read, I can get to know other people in other places, in other contexts, and I get to think about these questions without any sort of forced answer or an answer that you're trying to present to us, because life doesn't work that way. And that's not why we read necessarily, certainly not novels. But in other ways, some questions are answered and we can learn about ourselves that way too. I don't know if that makes any sense. So I interviewed Samir Pandya a few months ago about his novel, Our Beautiful Boys. In that novel, he explores this idea of masculinity and class and race and parenting. And I was thinking about the ways this book is allowing us to explore this idea of young women, their vulnerability, their challenges, even if in another bygone era of the 70s, which we've now decided it wasn't that long ago, and it's not that different today. So I appreciate the relevance of these issues, their long-lasting effects on readers who were maybe young in the 70s and can read about this now, or can read about this and still find that resonance. But, you know, so this question of I read presents more questions for me, and I get to think about these things. That's what I love. That's what I love.
Yeah.
But what do you hope readers will find their way to from reading your books or this particular book?
Oh, that's so interesting. I guess my real hope is that readers will, you know, get a feeling of compassion and understanding for young women. I guess that's what I really feel. I feel like in our culture, a lot of times, at least when I was a young mother, there was a lot of kind of built-in animosity toward young women in their teens. I would hear it in mothers who had teenage girls and complaining about them. And I feel like teenage years are really difficult. They're really precious. They're so full of possibility and opportunity that, you know, they're almost overflowing. And at the same time, teenagers are so vulnerable. And, you know, there's so many different delicacies. So they're almost like walking a tightrope. So I feel like, you know, especially for me, young teenage girls in this culture, now we see that they're losing control of their bodies. You know, they're who knows what's going to be lost next. Yeah. But I think we need to have a better understanding of what it's like to be a young teenage female in this culture. And I hope that Renee shows us that. And I feel like taking her away from her family, out of her own context, she's kind of set apart. She's kind of set in relief so that all of the pressures of the culture descend on her. And when you see that, I hope you can, you know, look into the eyes of these young girls and young women and understand better, that we can understand better what their pressures are, what their struggles are, and, you know, support them, help them through. And also, let me just say, go backwards a little bit and understand ourselves at that age. I mean, for me, this was a big revelation to kind of go back and see myself as a teenager, young teenager, going through all of these things. Because, you know, for women, there's a lot of shame about who we were as teenagers, about who we were coming of age sexually. And I think that that's not right. I think that we need to understand that the things that happened to us and the things that we did had a lot to do with the culture we're living in and the pressures we're feeling to conform.
Ah, so profound. Thank you. Paula Saunders, thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it. What a thrill.
Thank you, Yvette. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Paula Saunders is the author of Starting From Here. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.